Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Kate Andrews and Fraser Nelson. So it's been speculated for a couple of weeks now, but finally, late last night, the quarantine for visitors from France has been put into place, but not until tomorrow morning, 4 a.m. So what do we make of this quarantine? Fraser, why don't you kick us off?
It is rather depressing, actually. One of the things that we've seen in the virus is a tendency to see a threat in the other, the next door neighbour of a sort of nasty group. And the idea that France is so hoaching with coronavirus that we need to hoist up the drawbridge around our little island and protect these virus-bearing Frenchmen is pretty strange. I mean, if you look at their infection rates, sure, there's a problem in Paris right now. There was a little bit of an uptick in the southwest, but it is nothing. I think the vast majority of France is well below what Germany regards as a safe limit of 50 infections per 100,000 people over the course of a week. There are several parts of England that are higher than the place we're worried about in France. And the other thing is that when Germany declared its limit of 50, it didn't automatically shut down when it got above 50. It would wait for a week or two, because sometimes things can flare up and then go away. So what's the point in overreacting? So to actually say, for Britain to say that we advise against unnecessary travel to France, you would have needed a pretty good reason, which simply hasn't presented itself. Now, what I am currently very interested in is whether this is being done on a false premise. The number of cases, sure, is going up in France. The number of cases was going up in Sweden quite a lot. But the question is this because more COVID is happening or simply because it's being detected? There's another indicator, which to me is the more reliable indicator, and that is the number of hospital admissions. People who are actually sick enough to go into hospital with the virus. I'm sure if it's only a relatively small number of people, but if a number of COVID is going up in a country, then that ought to be reflected in hospital admissions. And in France, it isn't. The daily figures show that it has been on a steady decline ever since the peak of the epidemic. And in Spain, as France, as within Spain, it hasn't gone up. So I do worry that the Prime Minister has been a bit trigger-happy with the quarantine and might well have ostracised our neighbour and a major trading partner for no good reason.
Indeed, Kate, today a couple of French ministers have come out to suggest that there might be tit for tat, that British visitors to France might have to quarantine for 2 weeks as well.
Well, let's not forget that political tensions were already high between the UK and France. Looking at the Brexit negotiations, both parties have very different ideas about what that trade deal should look like come the end of the year between the UK and the EU. So I think that the response from France and even the decision from the UK suggests that COVID-19 policy is laced with some of these political tensions. But the UK is taking an ultra-cautious approach here. The reason that France has fallen off the green list, along with Malta, Monaco, Aruba, and others, is because the infection rates have risen above 20 per 100,000 people. I mean, we're talking really cautious stuff. And as Fraser says, and as Ross Clark also says on Coffee House today, a lot of these countries may well be penalized for increasing their testing. And these figures don't mean all that much unless you're testing random samples of the public. There's a study by Imperial College this week which shows that 3 million people in the UK have had the disease in some kind of antibody, more than 10 times the official figure. So unless you're calculating this in the right way, you're going to get figures that are skewed. And there's really serious economic damage that comes with this, not just in terms of the tourism, though that's huge between Britain and France, but if, as Fraser says, the Prime Minister has a trigger finger when it comes to travel quarantines, when it comes to let's expand this to local lockdowns, people can't plan. They can't feel confident. Employers can't reopen certain businesses. People won't make plans to travel. It has huge, vast implications for recovering from the biggest economic contraction we've seen in 300 years, as we learned this week.
So, Fraser, speaking of Boris Johnson's trigger-happy finger, overnight the penalty for not wearing a mask has also been doubled, so you can be fined up to £3,200 for not wearing one in places that you should be. We used to think of Boris Johnson as a liberal, if not a libertarian, not in his instincts, but has he changed his instincts now?
Well, yes, of course he is. I mean, nothing about the COVID lockdown is liberal. I think he started off trying to take a liberal approach, thinking society ought to be trusted to respond. That's what Sweden did. I think Sweden has been largely vindicated in its policy. But I think the Prime Minister gave up on that strategy. And then he had to, as soon as you go down issuing orders, you've got a problem if people don't really respect and obey these orders. One of the problems he's got now is telling young people that they can't really meet up and go drinking and go to clubs. Now, a rational young person would try to work out what the problem is in this, given that they're more likely to be struck by lightning than catch a fatal dose of COVID. And so people are disrespecting these rules, and young people are doing as you might expect. They're meeting up in unregulated gatherings. So the Prime Minister is trying to crack down on them, saying that people who are caught will be fined £10,000. One of our interns is with us this week is saying that her friends are going off to these illegal raves quite regularly. And, you know, the police will come along at sort of 3 a.m, tell them to go home, and they will. But the problem is, of course, is if these things are being done below the law, they're also far more likely to be targeted by organised criminals, drug dealers. So it is a concern. But this is what happens if you outlaw legal activity of people getting together in parties. So I think that young people especially will be testing the limits of the government's endurance here. It is not unequivocally the case that if you catch COVID, you're posing a risk to the rest of society. A great many people will argue that it's, if anything, the civic duty of young people to go out there, to mix with each other, to build up herd immunity. Because once, if you do that amongst young people who are young, healthy, who can shrug off the virus, who in the majority of cases don't even know they've got the virus, then that is the quickest route to giving protection for the rest of society and those who it affects a lot more. So yes, you're right. I mean, Boris Johnson is a liberal who has been mugged by the need to come up with a liberal COVID response. He doesn't like it. He said a couple of months ago that he's been amazed how easy it was to take people's freedoms away from them and how difficult it is to give those freedoms back. And we're still finding out just how difficult it is, even at a case now where the levels of COVID in Britain are significantly below that of seasonal flu. We are still seeing lots of strictures, quarantines placed, and fines for not wearing masks increased.
Although, Kate, there is some cause for optimism, as today the government has eased off some of the things that we were going to be easing off 2 weeks ago.
Yes, so from this weekend, casinos, bowling alleys, close contact beauty salons are able to reopen up. There's a whole list, as well as weddings being able to go back up to 30 people. So this is an important moment in which a lot of non-essential venues are going to be able to open back up. But of course, this doesn't mean that they can open as normal. And actually, we're already seeing some indication from arts venues that they just aren't going to be opening up because they don't have the capacity. It's not possible to do so. These are still very difficult times. And we must remember that a few weeks back when these openings were delayed, the chief medical officer, Chris Whitty, said that he thought we were just about at the point where we couldn't open up much more without having to make some kind of trade-off or sacrifice because we would see a surge in the virus. So I actually find it quite interesting that this is going ahead. Perhaps it means there's a bit more wiggle room than he implied a few weeks ago. But I think we should definitely be prepared to see U-turns and shutdowns if things don't go the way the government wants. Look at what's happened with France, their ultra-cautious approach. Look at what's happening with these local lockdowns in Preston and in Greater Manchester, also very cautious approaches. If there's any indication of a slight uptick in the infections, I would not be surprised at all if these particular venues were the targets because they were late in the game to open up for a reason. They tend to be the venues where it's harder to socially distance. And we know, especially as they face trying to get kids back to school in a few weeks' time, that they're likely to do a heck of a lot to make sure that's possible, even if it's just about comforting the public, making them feel perhaps like if something else shuts down, schools can open up.
And Fraser, speaking of schools, you know, we've been talking about young people quite a lot on the podcast this week, but one thing we haven't talked about much is whether or not schools are actually going to be reopening in September. The government would like to do it, but it seems like, anecdotally, a lot of parents are very confused about what's actually going to happen and how it's going to work.
That's right. Parents have not been told by schools for sure that their child will be welcomed back on a normal basis. There's only a few weeks to go right now until schools open up. And I'll tell you why it's a concern. If you take my younger son is going to sit his 11 plus exams in January. A lot of his friends are going to do the same. Now, parents there are very worried because the year, if they're up against kids at private school who will absolutely be going back as normal. Now, if you're a state school kid trying to compete against the private school cohort for 11 plus, it's very difficult at the best of times. Now, there are some parents who are thinking, look, if I can't be sure that my child isn't going to be given an education on a daily basis in September, for now I'll just homeschool him. But if you're going to homeschool them, you need to make arrangements now. You need to get a tutor in or whatever else you're going to do. So right now, parents need to know for sure, are their children going to be educated on a proper basis? All the government's saying is that it wants to do it, it's determined to do it. But we've heard plenty from this government before that it wants to or is determined to do things it turns out to be unable to do. So there is still that. I mean, also we've heard during the middle of lockdown that the government hoped to get all year groups back to school by the end of summer. That didn't happen. So what if schools don't open again? It's a pretty big gamble. For children at delicate points in their lives, certainly as anybody sitting in 11 pluses, certainly any state school kid sitting in 11 pluses, it certainly makes you nervous. Like right now, I as a parent, I'm quite worried about whether Dominic is going to do well in his 11 pluses. I mean, sure, we give him a bit of help at home. We try to compensate for whatever he'd be getting in private school, but it's difficult. Difficult even with daily classes. All the more difficult now.
Fraser and Kate, thanks very much. And do join us for our Saturday episode released tomorrow, where Fraser speaks to Kaya Ilska, one of the students who has been incredibly hard done by the results moderation this week. Thanks for listening and join us again then.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.